If anyone's out there, has managed to get the signal and is signing for help, keep trying to find me. Please. And if no one's out there, don't tell me. I'll keep talking to you like you are. Shit. Where to begin? It's after dinner. Roughly 36 hours since I put out my first distress call. The signal remains. SOS. Sapphire Springs, Washington State, come find me and bring the cavalry and tear down the gates. Please. We're supposed to be in private reflection or something equal to that right now. I say equal to because names vary wildly around here. In terms of supposed religious events, half the time I'm convinced they're all making it up as they go, but that's almost more terrifying than this madness being planned. But that aside, I'm never good with titles unless I've got them written down. I did, once, in a tiny square notebook I tied to my stomach on my way in, but shit hit the fan. It's not accessible anymore. For the aforementioned private reflection period, somehow I managed to commandeer the room I share with two other teenage-ish girls. So now I'm here, talking to you, putting out my distress signal. Because I'm in a lot of fucking distress right now. Today, at morning mass, the Reverend fucking called me out. Fucking called me out in front of all 200 fucking cultists. And do you know what he said? Come see me tonight after evening reflection. What the hell does that mean? There's no way it's some crazy sex thing. Like my mind first went. These people are more pious with the whole abstinence gig than a public high school's health teacher. There's no way he's gonna try to... Not even gonna go there. Which brings me to option two. He's found me out. Found out about the year and a half old news story I tried to write. Found out about this distress call. Found out about any number of things I've tried to bury while I'm stuck here. And that is far more terrifying than his genitals. I should probably tell you why. I mentioned earlier that I used to have a notebook. It had everything I'd been gathering for the case. Names, relations, things I'd seen and things that had terrified me. Why I was there. Here. I also mentioned that everything exploded. Metaphorically, technically, but it seemed real enough in the moment. Too many red faces. Too many screams. I swear, this all connects. Because I mentioned in the last SOS a girl who wanted out. Sarah. She's dead. They killed her. Not the Reverend directly. He considers himself too unaffected for that, but his lackeys, the teachers, the punishers, the Michael, they beat her to death. Someone got suspicious about her activities, and I have no godly idea how she managed half them, though if she was still around, I'd beg her to tell me. And so when she was out doing chores, a group of the men broke into her room and tore the place apart, looking for any kind of evidence she wanted to be in the new world. They found a tube of mascara and a cheap cell phone. On it was a series of texts and calls to a girl who could only be identified as her girlfriend. A girl in some city outside of the compound who sent love notes in the form of poems and had, as was indicated in the very first text, bought the phone for her. A meeting was... a witch hunt was called almost directly after the damning evidence was found. Sarah was dragged from the river to the clearing by her hair and thrown to the ground. He showed all of us gathered the phone and started to read off the texts, going back and forth between each girl's voice and throwing in commentary, disgracing their affections. This new world tech has turned her into a homosexual. This girl is a disease to our community, has turned her back on our ways for sin, and for that, she must pay retribution. We must shelter our women. We must protect them from the vanities and sexuality of the new world. And he went on and on, his face getting steadily redder and voice getting louder and louder until it climaxed. The Reverend screeching into our ears and suddenly becoming deadly calm. He lobbed the phone at Sarah's head, and even in the back of this huge clearing with hundreds of people in front of me, I could hear the crack it made as it hit her skull. She started to cry, and that's when it happened. Like some kind of twisted hive mind, the crowd started to swarm onto the platform, kicking and spitting and shouting curses at this terrified teenage girl until she was lost underneath a sea of people. And the only reason I could tell she was still alive was the screaming. She screamed until someone broke her ribs or punctured one of her lungs or fucking something. And then they retreated. She was dead. Not even looking like Sarah anymore. Her kerchief had been ripped off at some point, and her face was indistinguishable underneath all the swelling, and there was blood, more than you would think. And no one ever spoke her name again. That was maybe a month after I got there. The worst thing, the most goddamn selfish thing, was that I was just so grateful it wasn't me. We shared a room. And that was when I kept my case notes that I had been making for this freaking story in a hole in my mattress. If the men had stripped the entire room, if they hadn't found anything in Sarah's stuff or had just decided to keep going to look through everyone's shit or just the new recruits to make sure she was hiding nothing, I would have been up there beside her. And I just stood in the back, like a coward, but just as guilty. Not making eye contact. Just fucking glad it wasn't me. But let's not talk about Sarah anymore. I've got time yet to share her fate. Especially if the Reverend found the radio. Or all the notes I took buried after the incident. In a cardboard box as far away from the main compound as I could get it. I think I gave up on my story that night. Stopped recording events and just wanted to survive the 3 months I was supposed to be there until I could get out, get far away, and never think about it again. That wasn't a successful topic change. I'm still here. Sarah's still dead. And I've got an impending meeting with the Reverend. Best case, I've committed some stupid infraction and Michael convinced him to deal with it privately. Worst case, well, you know. If I don't come back, if there are no more broadcasts, keep looking. Keep looking.
Sapphire Springs, Episode 2, What Happened to Sarah, written and edited by me, Ari Arwin. The voice you just heard was the lovely Megan Cassidy as Kestrel Kane. She is incredibly talented, if you haven't noticed, and I'm so incredibly grateful that she's on our team. All that aside, if you would like to follow us on social media, you can follow us on Tumblr at Sapphire Springs Podcast or on Twitter at SSpringsPod. Here you'll find updates, blog posty stuff, and links to the transcripts. Those are on the Tumblr as well as in the description. So, as always, thank you for tuning into our distress call, and we hope to see you again soon.